call to order this Committee on House Elections and Rules this wonderful 29th day of June. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 27. And I believe the Treasurer is here to testify on that. We'll start with you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and I'm here to ask for your support of Senate Bill 27 and think this is an important piece of legislation that needs to be passed this session. Simply, Senate Bill 27 revises the fiscal impact statute to give the Price Tag Committee and the ability to provide voters with a much more accurate and complete estimate of the fiscal impact of ballot measures on state and local governments. It's important that voters be given the best estimate of the fiscal impact of measures so that they can be as informed as possible when they make a decision on a ballot initiative or referral. The fiscal impact statement is constructed by the Price Tag Committee, which is comprised of myself, the Secretary of State, the Director of the Department of Revenue, and the Director of the Department of Administrative Services. Currently, the statute, quote, requires us to, quote, estimate the amount of direct expenditure, direct reduction of expenditure, direct reduction in state revenue, direct tax revenue or indebtedness and interest. And that's a direct quote from the statute. That would be required to meet the requirements of a measure if it is enacted by law. The statute also requires the aggregate of amounts listed above that would be required by a city, county, or district if the measure was passed. These estimates are printed on the ballot along with the ballot title and measure summary. Over the past several years, the committee has had difficulty giving voters information about the full fiscal impacts of a ballot measure. There are many examples of these, and I'd like to just cite one, a recent one with ballot measure 11. Measure 11, as you recall, granted the state the authority to issue up to $200 million in general obligation bonds to help finance Oregon Health Sciences University's Oregon Opportunity Program. As you recall, the legislature passed this as a referral, but also alternative legislation was put in place should Measure 11 fail. So either way, you decided that you were going to make this investment. The question before the voters was, what type of financing were you going to ask them to do? And in simple terms, we were looking for the lowest cost of financing, which is a general obligation bond, which required a vote of the people and an approval. The challenge we had as a Price Tag Committee was we can only talk about measures passing. So we were confined to describe the fiscal impact should the measure pass and the cost that would come along with passing a measure, Measure 11. We had no ability to talk about should the measure fail, in which case, if a failure of this ballot measure happened, we would have still sold some debt instrument of the state at a higher cost. So hence, we could not tell the voters that a yes vote had a less cost than a no vote. And as a result, we, in my opinion and the committee's opinion, could not give a complete and accurate example or information to the voter before they voted. Before you also have some Dash 4 amendments. These amendments will allow the Price Tag Committee to include the fiscal statements information that any significant indirect economic or fiscal measure of effects of a measure, such as impact on employment, would be also described. I want to remind you this is the same type of information that you get on legislation, and I think this is another important piece for us to try to give as much information as possible to the voter, and something that the Legislative Revenue Office we've worked with in crafting this language would dovetail exactly with what you as a legislator decide on a bill and see the same information. So we would like to have that opportunity to have that information presented to us and also potentially to the voters. That is a real thumbnail sketch of this bill. It is something, again, I think is really important as we go forward to try to give voters the best information as possible, as much and complete information as possible as you decide and they decide on a ballot measure and the importance of that to the state and to themselves. Elizabeth, would you like to add to that?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. I've served on the Price Tag Committee for four election cycles. I concur with everything the Treasurer has said about the challenges that the Price Tag Committee has faced as measures have gotten more complicated over time. The improvements that the bill would place in the process include allowing us to give a range of potential impact rather than a single dollar amount. A number of times we have really struggled with the fact that you had to make assumptions, and based on the assumptions, the number could be here or the number could be there. So it would allow us to give a range instead of a single dollar amount. It would allow the committee to explain the assumptions that we've made so the public would understand what our thinking process was in coming up with an estimate. It would allow us to bring onto the group someone who would represent local government, because very often statewide ballot measures have local consequences as well as statewide. There's a lot of actual language improvement that you'll see in the amendments in the A. and Gross version of the bill. The substantive changes are in Section 1. Another thing that would be really valuable would be to allow the committee to do a statement similar to the explanatory statement that would go in the voter's pamphlet that would be longer and a little more comprehensive than what would be actually printed on the ballot. The Dash 4 amendments, as the Treasurer indicated, would require the committee to consult with Legislative Revenue Office on indirect economic or fiscal effects if they could be significant. And there are some other language improvements. My personal opinion, as having been a member of the committee, is that this would allow us to give much better, more complete information for citizens to consider as they decide how they want to vote on ballot measures. And I urge your support as well. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Treasurer, I appreciate you taking the time to be here, and same with you, Elizabeth. Appreciate you being here. One question that comes to mind, and I support the bill, and I think it's a wonderful idea. I see who the committee is comprised of on sub-6 of Section 1. I see when they convene in Section 2, and I see also in Section 2, sub-5, line 18 of page 3, it states that if a majority of the members of the Financial Estimate Committee do not approve the estimates or statement, the Secretary of State alone shall prepare, file, and certify the estimates or statement not later than the 88th day before the election at which the measure is to be voted upon, with the data upon which the estimates or statement is based. So they convene, they don't agree. Secretary of State then says, okay, we don't agree, I'm on my own here. Am I reading that correctly?
Mr. Chair, I believe you are reading it correctly. In the 8 years that I've served, we've never had that problem.
Right.
We have had situations where there was a strong difference of opinion between the members of the committee, and we kind of came down two and two, and what that forced us to do was work together to come up with something that we could all agree to. So the effort's always been to be able to agree on language.
Thank you. The one thing that comes to my mind, and I would never insinuate or assume that political games would be played in this building, but let's just say they were to be played for the sake of argument. If there's a ballot measure that maybe the Secretary of State, the State Treasurer, and the DAS Director and the Director of the Department of Revenue don't particularly like, with Republican success in statewide elections, I'm going to assume that most of those are probably going to be Democrats on that committee. That being said, let's say a ballot measure comes forward that probably is something that you disagree with. What's, as in this building, and I appreciate your analogy of we're given that information, when we receive fiscal impact statements, we often disagree with what comes out of legislative fiscal. What mechanism is there for the proponents of a ballot measure in this regard, other than the hearing where it's vetted and you can sit there and listen, or like we were listening now, what are the recourses for those people?
and Elizabeth maybe could add to this. I mean, first I want to be clear that I think this committee, and I echo Elizabeth's viewpoint earlier, that is, we've had very few disagreements. We've, in fact, the two of us have had disagreements about the way we, how much latitude we have in deciding what an impact is on a ballot measure. But I would say this group has worked very well, and in many, I mean, our challenge is to take information just like you and try to figure out as best we can. And I think the reason why you have a lot of the financial people of the state sitting at the table is that information is vetted by the financial people in Oregon, and that way we look at it and come up with a conclusion. I think what's important is that this group and this bill and the work we have done and will continue to do is to try to give the best information possible. I think that's the spirit. And as you described, when we have a hearing, much like this hearing, you take public input. And I would say I think you could find examples where proponents have been pleased and opponents have not been pleased, and vice versa. And so I think this has been a case where we've done as best a job. I've never heard anybody complain of politics being played with a financial impact statement. And that's from both sides. And so I think the reputation of this committee has been upheld. And again, the spirit of this bill is to continue that, but also try to give as best information as we can. As an example, I cited a small example, but again, limited.
Right. And I think some of my concern is probably alleviated in Section 1, Sub 4, just for the committee. I misread that originally, where a concise statement is put together of how you derive at whatever number that dollar impact may be. Would there be a fiscal incurred if, in fact, that I'm thinking out loud along the lines of if you're going to put this into the statement of the fiscal, would it be okay to put the justification for the fiscal also there, so that the voters can see that? As I think that might be a safeguard, and I apologize. I see some of the proponents of the bill that are getting wildly spun out, but I'm asking these questions. I didn't ask them when they were in my office earlier. It just came to my mind. So those of you that are getting spun out, I apologize. But would putting the justification for the fiscal also along with the fiscal be a huge burden?
Mr. Chair, there are two aspects of the bill that I would call to your attention. One is that in a couple of different places, the committee is admonished by the legislature to make sure that the statement is impartial. Secondly, by authorizing the committee to do a 500-word explanation, that was the idea, was that we would have an opportunity without taking up an enormous amount of space on the ballot in the voter's pamphlet to explain, here is how we arrived at the estimate of fiscal impact that we did. Here are the assumptions that we made. Here's the source of the information. So that we would be able to do just what you're asking.
Okay. Two points with regard to that. It's very permissive language in that sub four of may prepare. Would you be opposed to something, and I know we're running out of time and I'm not going to break my pick over this, but would you be opposed to something that said that if there is a disagreement as to the fiscal that's being issued on this, that a 500-word justification shall be done? May in all other cases, but if there's a disagreement as to what the committee came up with, that they shall itemize it out as they outline there.
Mr. Chair, could I ask for clarification of your thoughts? If there's a disagreement between members of the committee, or if there are concerns that come from those who are interested in the statement?
I'm more of like Section 2, Sub 2, where you hold this hearing where, you know, people can come and disagree at this hearing and submit suggested changes and other information. You know, from what you're saying, is this would rarely ever happen, my understanding. In your 8 years, you've always been able to come to agreement. Proponents and opponents have walked away fairly comfortable with the process. I'm assuming that there's probably going to be a case that will arise where somebody's not okay with the fiscal that's been issued for the voter statement, because it may or may not have the ability to pass it. And that's what I'm seeing. If, in fact, somebody's not happy with that, could we require that the justification, because one sub four is very permissive. It says they may issue this 500-word statement justifying basically how they got to where they are. Am I misreading?
Well, no, but may, if I might, Mr. Chair, the obviously the ballot voters pamphlet can be full of examples by proponents or opponents of what they like or don't like about the measure, including if they don't like what we put out. And I do think the intent of that section of the section sub four is to get us to put a statement. I think the leaning is we will do that. Okay. And I guess if a impact was determined indeterminate, I don't know if we would go to the extent of listing out in 500 words or less why it was indeterminate, maybe. But I think that even though it's somewhat discretionary, the intent is to really have us do that. And that was why we put that in there.
Mr. Chair?
I note that in Section 2, Sub 3, that after that hearing in which somebody may object, that they can revise the estimates or a revised statement. So, I think that sort of captures the essence of what you're after.
Yeah, I just want to be... The concern that I'm stumbling on... And again, I apologize for not bringing this up the first time I read over the bill. The only concern, Representative, that I'm trying to address is that if somebody disagrees with something as to what the statement that's been issued by this committee at this hearing, they go through the orally or written X, Y, and Z, and it's determined that the fiscal is X dollars, and they still disagree with that. And let's say the committee disagrees with that and they can't get to consensus and it goes to the Secretary of State under sub 5, that a statement shall be filed justifying how they arrived at that dollar amount instead of may. So if that disagreement goes to that point, at least giving the proponents or opponents of whomever on this situation the justification of exactly how you got to there, as opposed, because right now you wouldn't necessarily have to do that. I mean, if I'm reading that right, you could just say, well, this is what we decided. Sorry. We could write a justification, but we're choosing not to. I mean, am I reading that correctly? Is that a fair reading?
Mr. Chair, I think that as you look at the language, it is optional for the committee. So if there's a measure that the committee feels is simple enough that just a simple statement of the actual impact is all that's needed, then the committee probably wouldn't take up the space in the voters' pamphlet. One of the things that I said to the Senate committee, and I would like to say here, is this process is one that was created by the legislature in an attempt to be sure the voters are fully informed when measures are referred or when measures are initiated. So it is your process. And if you feel that the voters are more likely to be well informed by saying that if certain circumstances occur, whether it's a split vote in the price tag committee or it's serious question on the part of people who are interested in the measure itself, that you want to have an explanation so that the public does know what the thought process of the group was, that seems to me to be a very appropriate thing for you to include as a requirement.
Okay. Representative Greenlee had a question, was next, and then we'll go to Representative Moore.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Inga did a great job of orienting me a little earlier on this, and I've had a chance to think about it since we last talked. I have a particular interest in this since I'm right in the middle of a process of producing an initiative for a constitutional amendment with what's clearly an indeterminate cost estimate. And while the first part of the bill, attempting to clarify what might happen if the bill fails, as well as the bill passed, seems absolutely clear to me, but I'm a little worried about the second part, having had almost two sessions experience reading fiscals that frequently don't make any sense to me. And I worry about the second part of this. I worry about your attempt to make appear more determinate what is in fact indeterminate. The amendment that I've filed and is in the process now says to the legislature, says health care is the right of all Oregonians, and tells the legislature to do something about that over the next 4 years. Now, I don't see any way that anybody can figure out a cost around that. But I can imagine our LFO, they figured out lots of ways to stand on their head and make cost estimates about things that are not possible to estimate. And is there the danger in the second part of, or the dash four amendments perhaps that go with it, of trying to push and make things clear, understandable, and determinate when in fact they're not any of those three? Well, they may be clear and understandable, but they may not be determinate. And are you worried about that, Randall? Is that something that's...
Representative Chair and Representative Greenlick, I think we could have many examples where we can't determine a fiscal impact. I mean, I think that's possible.
And is that an open answer under this? I mean,
it can be, yeah. And I think the spirit of this committee, again, as Elizabeth articulated, is to carry out your wish, which is to try to inform the voters. And I think we have run across instances where we feel collectively the law today is way too restrictive in the sense of it's too prescriptive and very only looking at direct, and it talks nothing about failure, and trying to give more information. And as we all know, the ballot has become it's always been a powerful tool, but it's being used fairly frequently. And it's always a fine line because, as you know, proponents and opponents have varying viewpoints, and they exercise that before us. And sometimes they're happy with what we come out with. Both sides may or may not like it. And then depending on what the issue is, something like yours, it's hard to speculate. Should that be before the voters? I would have no idea what would be presented to us. It could be an instance where we couldn't determine that because it's so far out.
Yeah, I follow
up.
Yeah, a very recent case that I thought having more latitude to make this decision was with Measure 37, where the estimate had to do with a very narrow estimate, the direct cost that governments might pay for processing claims, and didn't get into a lot of the issues about it said government shall pay, and then the question is, there seemed to be some statement about whether the government might or might not be able to pay for those claims. Would it seem to me there would have been more room. So basically it seems to me the idea makes some sense, but I was just a little bit worrying, and I'm glad to get your reassurance that the purpose isn't to make clear what is not clear or to make certain what is not certain. And I think that's...
Well, and if I might, Mr. Chair, that's part of the reason of that 500-word explanation. I mean, I think right now we don't have any way of sort of explaining our thinking and thought process and what was presented. I mean, often what we get are people within government who may look, who are going to oversee a program, and they would come to us and say, here's what we think this might cost, just much like when you get in the Ways and Means process, budgets and committee impacts. You get somebody to come in and present what they think is their best estimate of what that might cost, or the impact positive or negative on them. So I think my experience has been, and Elizabeth's been at this longer than I have by 4 years, we've done a good job. The problem today, in my view, is our hands are too tied given the way the law's written. Not that I'm trying to unbridle our hands, but I think the point here is to find a balance to give a little more information to the public. And in my view, this is a really important piece out there because, as we see, there's major policies being decided directly.
Well, I think you've addressed just a huge concern you can follow up when I'm done. Thank you. Appreciate it. The concern
on yours
to follow up on mine. The concern, I mean, this should have been done a long time ago, by my estimates. I mean, you're addressing an issue, and I think Measure 37 is a. While I supported it, I think that Measure 11 and Measure 5, and you can go on down the list of legislating by ballot title that sounds good, and people aren't always aware of what that means to them. So I appreciate you coming forward with this, and we'll wrap up the questions here and bring it to a vote here soon.
There's no emergency clause on this. Would this take effect for the November 06? Measures under this?
No. Yes, it would be January 1 of 06. Yeah. So it would be effective, yes.
Effective into March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would My question is, right now, do you have a lot of people that come to that hearing and object to the estimates under current law? I'm a little worried about opening it up, and they have the opportunity now to object, and you have an opportunity to make a revised estimate and statement under this. But I wouldn't want to trigger folks coming in automatically just as a way of politicizing this. I mean, so right now, what's the process? Do you have a lot of folks coming?
You get more experience than that.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, over time, those hearings have been more popular as the measures that are on the ballot are more significant to Oregonians. And so we've early on, when I first started, there were a few that that there were people who were very, very interested in and came and testified, and others where all we had was the staff work that was done to help us evaluate the impact. Lately, it seems like more than half of the measures that are on the ballot are, people are very, very interested. They perceive the fiscal impacts as information that's important in the campaigns, and you know that we acknowledge that. And I think that's something that causes at least those of us who have been on this group serving together to be even more cautious about being careful about what it is we're estimating, being sure that it is something that can be determined or estimated with reasonable certainty, and not speculating in a way that then would be perceived as a political outcome. So the group's just been very careful, and I think the balance of having two elected officials who have a mandate that's coming from the voters directly to be responsible in their positions, and two bureaucrats, basically, who are kind of hidebound about we need to follow the law and be sure that what we're doing is fully documented, that you get a good balance from that. And bringing in a fifth person from local government also then would is going to further inform that.
Thank you.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Treasurer, I've got a real simple question.
Sure.
Maybe too simple, I don't know. I've just, as you know, we have legislative revenue estimates and statements, and we also have legislative fiscal statements. And your bill continually refers to the legislative revenue officer consulting with him, giving you those kind of statements. Is your intention to also consult with the legislative fiscal to get fiscal impacts as opposed to revenue impacts?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, I would say yes. When we have an open process, we invite anybody can come. Legislative fiscal certainly present, and that would be, I think, the revenue committee. The reason why we worked with Paul was he prepares a revenue projection on bills that you see, and we thought that was important for us to try to get something similar and potentially present that to the voters. So we do work with fiscal in many ways, just because we know that if it has an impact on a specific agency, that agency will often come and testify before us, and I think we can and have relied on fiscal if they need be.
My concern was just that you're getting fiscal impact statements from the revenue office and not the fiscal office. Yeah, I mean, a real simple thing. I'm sure that's no big deal, but that's what the what it says. It says the revenue, legislative revenue officer. So I think it's a great bill. Thanks.
Thank you.
Representative Farr, final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I too think it's a great bill. I've supported it from the beginning, but I have a question regarding Measure 11. At the time that Measure 11 was proposed, was there a clear-cut way that you could have issued a financial analysis on what it was going to ultimately cost the state?
Does this committee have a crystal ball when we get it? Unfortunately, no. Actually, Elizabeth, were you there when that came together?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, are you talking about the minimum mandatory sentencing? I was on the committee when that measure came forward, and the discussion was, because of prosecutorial discretion by district attorneys on how they charge, it was impossible to determine how many people might be charged with Measure 11 offenses if they were charged, whether they would be convicted, because obviously the jury process makes that determination. And so we said this is an indeterminate impact. I think that if we had the kind of statute that Senate Bill 27 would do, the committee would be able to at least identify the considerations and the possibilities that if a significant number of people are charged under Measure 11 and if they are convicted and that increases the numbers of people who have to serve, then that's going to mean prison construction and it's going to mean additional people to staff and those prisons and costs to maintain them, and at least point out what some of those consequences would be. And I still think that the group would probably be very reticent about trying to attach a number to it simply because of those variables. But we could at least point out some of the risks and financial risks and potential consequences.
Follow up. So you could have issued a potential cost analysis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, what this language would allow would be for the committee to be able to estimate direct consequences, which I think we probably would end up using the same standard we have, which is are we confident that the information we've got from the measure itself leads us to a fairly tight range in terms of potential cost. What I think would happen here is if I were still on the committee making the determination, my recommendation would probably be the cost. We cannot estimate the long-term cost of ballot measure 11. The considerations that would go into any estimate would include numbers of people charged, numbers of people convicted, the need to build prisons and operate and maintain them, and I personally would not be able to attach a number to that, simply because it's a very, very long-term policy change by the public. So I don't think this is going to allow any group of humans to look into the future, as the treasurer said, to look into a crystal ball and say, here's a number, this is exactly what it's going to cost. I think the group still would have some situations where we would have to say, we cannot determine the impact, but at least we could say these are the kinds of things that could contribute to cost.
Representative Farr, that's addressed in Section 1, Sub 3E, where the description of the most likely financial effect or effects of the adoption or defeat of the measure and gives them that discretion, coupled with the 500-word statement that was my understanding of how they got to that number. And obviously, the factors that are indeterminable at that, as you say, based on those factors of sentencing guidelines, the variables, conviction rates, et cetera, in that case, you could probably come up with a rough estimate of court cost, of district attorney's cost, of jail space, et cetera, and come up with some form of a number. It's not going to be precise, but you can at least identify in a 500-word supplemental of how they got there, I think, is my bad answer. I don't know if your question's being answered or not.
Well, it hasn't actually been answered the way I wanted it to be answered, but I think you know where I'm going with this. I mean, potentially there could be any measure, either referred or initiated, that would have a tremendous financial impact on the state, and even with this bill, you would have no way to truly identify what those costs would be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Farr, you're absolutely right.
If I might, Mr. Chair, it's much like you sitting behind a desk making decisions. It's hard to know sometimes whether you're going to achieve your policy goal or the cost. And you know, I think what we're trying to do is reflect that with the best effort and best information available at the time, Measure 11 is sort of easy now in hindsight to go back and say, well, now we can draw a line and say this is what it did cost. And that's the hard part with this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 27, open a work session on Senate Bill 27. Representative Thatcher.
Yes, I move Senate Bill 20, or the amendment, A4 amendment, into Senate Bill 27.
Representative Thatcher moves the -4 amendments into Senate Bill 27. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, done. Representative Thatcher.
I move Senate Bill 27 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher moves Senate Bill 27 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none.
Do I have to declare a conflict on this, since it will affect? And it's a serious question.
No,
it will affect.
I know where you're going. I don't see any harm in doing it. CYA.
Why don't I put a statement of conflict in it, since I will have a
initiative.
I believe I will have an initiative that will be subject to.
I think you can probably state it for the record if that would save you time.
No, that's what I thought
you were going to write a statement.
No, no.
Okay.
I was just stating for the record that
so
you may have a conflict.
And maybe I should state for the record as well. I may have a potential conflict and that I'm sponsoring an initiative as well.
So noted.
Chair
votes aye.
Yeah.
Votes aye.
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 Aye. Senate Bill 27, receiving the necessary votes, will move to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Farr, would you like to carry this bill?
I would be delighted, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Committee, we will stand at ease for
the work session.
What's that? Oh, the work session. Close work session on Senate Bill 27. Thank you. We'll stand at ease for 5 minutes. Representative Holby's staff has provided cake for folks just outside, and I have to testify in Senate rules. So 5 minutes. To order. Currently come back into
some semi-recorded order.
Exactly. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1008. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 1008. Colleagues, the Senate Bill, or the Dash 25s, are before you. They address some of the concerns that were brought up, and I will attempt to go through them, as I've been in more meetings on this bill than I care to describe. If you take out your 23s, your 24s, and your 22s, they have been, what's that? 14 and 18 will need to be rescinded because they're in the 25s. Colleagues, we'll start with the Dash 22s. The concern that we had with the Dash 22s, or that I had with the Dash 22s, were simply a redundance of some language, and I wanted to make sure that the 22s didn't supersede the 14s and the 18s as they take back some of the changes. So the 22s are simply technical amendments from the Treasurer's Office that have been blended into the 25s. I'll just give you an example. In Section 5, we took out, as a committee, specific references to lobby organizations, and that was in the 22s, but will be taken back out in the blended 25s, as you'll see. So the 22s, I'm comfortable in saying, are technical amendments brought forward by the Treasurer. The 24s are also technical amendments that were brought forward by, I believe it was the Department of Revenue.
Yes.
And nothing, those have been incorporated in the 25s as well. The 23s is where it kind of got tricky. We redid the language on Section 4, making it entirely permissive for the governor to activate the components of 1008, and that being the only way 1008 is activated. Section 5 of the Dash 23s was the Senate confirmation component was taken out. It's been put back in, so it's in its original form. I thought that was necessary, and so did Senator Deckert on the other side. The in Section 20, Sub 2, we tightened up that language so that it didn't reference just an electric utility.
Sorry, what section?
Section. I'm on the Dash 23, Section 20, Sub 2. We tightened up that language into the 25s that made it a little bit more specific so that it didn't simply allow for the state to start taking over any utilities, was the concern. So I would like to, for the record, thank Senator Deckert for his hard work on this and his willingness to, for lack of a better word, babysit me through this process. So, Senator, I thank you, and that whole demeanor thing I think has rubbed off a little bit, and I'm working on it,
But you're doing a wonderful job on this. We, at this time, the intention is there is one amendment that is being worked on that I haven't talked to Senator Deckard about, but I'm seeing him now, that we will talk about, and the intention will be to move this bill on Friday at that committee meeting. So we'll discuss the 25s if there's any discussion, but other than that, with the exception of the dash 26s that are coming, the committee will yay or nay them. Yes.
We had previously done 12, 14, and 18. Some of them are in here and some of them aren't.
They're in here. We're gonna have
14
to.
14 may not be out here, is that right?
What's that?
12.
The dash 12s. Is Dexter here?
Dexter.
You better state your name for the record and do all that stuff.
Mr. Chair, members, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. My understanding was that the committee had previously adopted 14, 18, 22, and 24. They were all in here. 14, I was not aware of 12.
14, 18, 12, 14, 18.
Yeah,
we had done 12, 14, 18.
Yeah, but 12, which now my understanding is basically a rewrite of Section 46.
That's correct. The Trojan piece?
That will need to be incorporated in here.
Okay. That's good. Thanks. So this is 12, 14, and 18 should be reflected in the 25s. The 12s are not reflected in the 25, so we'll need to add those.
Or delete 14 and 18 from our current approval before we get to 25, right?
Well, we would have to rescind. My understanding is we have to rescind the 14s and the 18s, and then move in the 25s.
Right.
But if we can, it's almost a moot point. We can wait till the rewrite of the 25s come, which would be the 27s, that will incorporate the 12s, 14s, and 18s, and rescind all those and move in the new amendment, I guess, on Friday. And then that should address that.
Mr. How about 13s? Are we going to discuss that today? That seems like a kind of important.
The 13s, the chair is not going to entertain the dash 13s at this time. Representative March.
As long as we're entertaining or not.
And always try to be entertaining.
There were also dash 19s that dealt with some of the preference power issues and current standing of PGE customers, et cetera. Are we going to have the opportunity to kind of look at incorporating some of those features into this?
No. We will not. The chair will not entertain the dash 19s. Any other entertaining questions? Thank you, Dexter. So, committee, I guess we'll look at the 25s. We'll wait. Dexter will have a rewrite that will incorporate the 12s. And then on Friday, we'll move out the 12s, 14s, and 18s and move in what would probably be the 27s at that time and get this bill out of this committee. So, Representative March.
You mentioned 26s. Which will now be incorporated into the 27s?
No, the 26s will be a standalone for the committee to discuss.
We don't have those?
Conceptual idea of what those are.
You do not have anything at this point, and until I see what comes out of Legislative Council, I am not willing to conceptually articulate what they will or will not say. But you will have them by this afternoon, I believe. Is that correct, Dexter? The dash 26s, possibly? Okay. That's why we're waiting until Friday, because I want to give everybody one day to digest all the changes that we've made.
Inarticulate them at this time.
I wouldn't want to inarticulate them either. Nor would I want to spell it. So, committee, with that, I think we can adjourn, and we will wait to hear from Dexter with the new amendments. 1 o'clock.